Welcome back to the latest episode of our Getting to Know series as part of the JD Cymru Leagues podcast. Over the last few months, we've spoken to players and managers across the leagues about their journeys through Welsh football, and I've enjoyed my conversations with Craig Harrison, Christian Edwards, Sean Eardley and Greg Draper immensely. Nick's outings too have been fantastic, to speak to some great characters across the domestic game in Wales. Make sure you check out the latest episodes, by the way. But today, we're bringing you the story of one of the countless incredible volunteers that make our game in Wales what it is. Without people like my guest today, our domestic game in Wales would grind to a halt and simply wouldn't exist. It's been a few months in the planning, as this man is super busy, so much so that we only got time to talk to him when he was on international duty with Wales under-21s, such as the success he has had in his field as a result of volunteering with his club some 8 years ago. Stay tuned to hear from my special guest this week, an incredible photographer and a fantastic guy, Connors Quay Nomads' very own Nick Mesny. So we talk about the community of football and the volunteers and so on that make it all happen. I just want to cancel a little myth right away. It's not Sandy Morrison that has turned the Nomads around. It is this man sat opposite me here. 8 years ago, I think, 7 years ago maybe, my guest today joined the Nomads, and ever since then, it's all been uphill. Andy sort of jumped in the middle, but yeah, it's down to this one here in my mind. Nick Mesny, thank you for joining us.
No problem, thanks Jamie, thanks for having me.
Not a bad intro.
Yeah, I can't say I was quite expecting that, but no, I can take very little credit, to be perfectly honest. I just document what's happening on the pitch and try and cover it as best as I can do, along with Will at the Nomads, who does all of the reports and everything sort of thing for the games. But yeah, it's been an outstanding last 5, 6, 7 years sort of thing since I've been getting involved with it all and everything.
And obviously today we're part of the under-21s Wales camp, and we will get to how you've got there in a minute, but let's go back to where it all began. I mean, you were talking earlier, it was August 2012, I think.
Yeah.
Can you bring back to how you got involved, sort of thing?
Yeah, basically Gap Personnel sort of bought into the club, and I worked with Gap Personnel at the time, and 6 to 8 months went past and nothing kind of came to fruition from it. And then all of a sudden Gary Dewhurst, the owner, just sort of said to me, "Nick, you're into your football, aren't you? Do you want to get involved?" And yeah, absolutely, jump at the chance kind of thing. So I sort of started like looking after the website to start with, just kind of posting the odd thing here and there, redesigned the website, made it a bit nicer, and then Dave Rapson, who was the photographer at the time, was kind of calling it a day, and Gary just said to me, "Right, Nick, we need a new photographer. Here's 500 quid, go out and get yourself a entry level camera, you're the new photographer for the club." And then I just sort of cracked on from there, basically. And it was the first game I remember covering was we played against Port Talbot, and it was the first game back at Deeside Stadium, back in the Welsh Premier League as it was back then. We won 2-0, so it was a good start sort of thing for me, basically.
And we were just talking earlier, and I don't think we knew this until this morning, but you started in 2012, I started uni in 2012 and started covering Bangor City for student radio at the time,
so
it's funny how things go, you know. And I think from my perspective, and I think you're the same, you know, I've certainly fallen in love with it.
Absolutely,
I loved football before, but I've fallen in love with the work of it, the being around all these volunteers, being around all these great people, and also the craft of it as well. I mean, you really enjoy that side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much that goes into not only a match day, but everything before a match day as well, sort of thing that goes on behind the scenes at the club. I mean, everybody sees the 90 minutes on the field at the end of the day, but there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. There's the volunteers, the stewards, the secretaries, anybody that's involved on a match day of making everything run smoothly, that, like I say, 90% of people sort of don't really see. We're the ones that sort of fade into the background a little bit, and just promote everything else for everybody else to see, really. But yeah, there's so many fantastic people involved, like, especially like at Connors Kiefer, obviously that's where I'm involved at. There's so many people that are involved and have been involved for a long time before me as well, sort of thing. I mean, we've got the likes of a gentleman called Bill Dudley. He's 95, I think, off the top of my head, and he was there the day that the club was founded. He's named in a little old document that we've got, and Mr. W. Dudley Esquire is listed in 1946, the founding meeting of the club, and he still comes to most games at his age now. We've got the likes of John and Roma Gray, who make the club tick. They ran it for a long time before Gap got involved and have still been there pretty much every day since as well, sort of thing, really. I'm going to miss people out, obviously, without trying to name every single person, but everything that goes into making a football club what it is. That's what I love, to be honest with you, and what we've been doing today with the Wales under-21s, getting ready for an international match. I'd never thought I'd have been prepping an international under-21s match if you'd have asked me 15 years ago. But that's what you get from volunteering and being involved with your local club. That's kind of what's got me spotted for the international call-up, so to speak, basically.
And I mean, with respect to the Nomads, you know, that people who know of them these days maybe have only just started following the Cymru football sort of thing. We'll see the Nomads as a perennial European qualifiers, you know, five League Cup semi-finals in a row, hoping to go beyond that this weekend for the first time in a few years. And then, you know, but it hasn't always been like that. You know, I think we were talking in August at the Belgrade game in Rill about how 8 years ago you were sort of mid-table in Tier 2, and now, you know, here you are. So
absolutely.
Can you talk me through that journey? Because you've been there for most of it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I remember being... can't remember the exact season, but I know there was a last game of the season where we needed to beat Avon Lido to stay up, and it was that tight. And I think then within 18 months, we were then in our first Europa League playoff. We got beat by Aberystwyth in that game and didn't make the final, obviously, but... It's funny how things can turn around fairly quickly within the world of football, because just before I started covering, we'd had 2 years in the Cymru Alliance as well, as it was back then, and won the league back to back. Unfortunately, didn't come up due to licensing requirement on our stadium, but I believe we're still the only team to have won the league below back to back, because obviously it's a bit of a unique thing to do, sort of thing. But again, so you only have to go back, I think it was 2011, so you only have to go back 8 years, and we were in the second tier. And then flash forward 5 years and we were beating Stabæk over in Norway. So it suddenly turns around quite quickly when you look at that sort of a time frame. We've had some amazing nights and experiences since, kind of thing. But yeah, there was a long time of kind of fighting the cause down in the likes of Gilsfield and Slamrider and Mocknant and places like that, where they're not the most picturesque grounds, without sounding too horrible to them, sort of thing. I went to Gilsfield the other week and it was a nice muddy field, to be perfectly honest, but a lot of people give our ground stick. I know it's not the best, but when you drop down the league, you find yourself at the level below again, sort of thing. So you do what you do to get out of those leagues, and we did it, and we've been in the league, in the top flight ever since, kind of thing, and reap the rewards from it, basically.
And in terms of, obviously you said for yourself there that you couldn't have pictured maybe 15 years ago that you'd be sat in this seat now having done what you've done, but looking at the club as well, obviously there's been investment, and you
course,
know
yeah.
people like Andy and Jay and Craig and all the other people that I'm not going to name because I missed them out, have come in and made their contributions. But could you ever have seen in 2012 that this is where the club would be at this point?
No, I don't think so. Realistically, we were, for lack of a better term, we were relegation fodder at that point. As I say, we were one game away from going back down again. So it did come that close. I don't think if you'd have given a lot of people at Coniski Nomads that sort of a scenario 5-6 years ago, they'd have probably given you a bit of a funny look, to be perfectly honest. But the work that's been done, the investment that's been done, not only on the pitch in terms of players, but everything behind the scenes as well. Like, for example, getting the Key 3G through the door as well, that's been an absolutely enormous investment in the club. Got the nice 3G facility there for not only ourselves, but for the community to use. I think we put something out on Twitter, I want to say about a month ago. We had our first available booking slot since it had opened in 2015, so that shows you how heavily it's been used through the community, not just through Coniski Nomads, but local clubs, Harden Rangers, Aston Park Rangers, loads of Deeside Dragons, teams like that are local, youngsters all using our great facilities. And it's something that we pride ourselves on. Is I know that the lads that run the 3G as well take real pride in making sure that the pitch is fantastic. They roll it every day. I've been to some of the other 3G pitches that have been around for a long time, and they don't look like they've been rolled in a long time, and they do look like they need relaying, whereas ours, after 4 years now, still looks as good as it did on day one. So, and again, to sort of branch off, now that we've got a ladies team as well, first ever ladies team, again, I think maybe if you'd have gone back 7 or 8 years and said, right, you're going to be in Europe, you're going to be have an amazing academy, and you're going to have a ladies team that are really flying at in their first season, I don't think anybody could have foreseen it, to be honest. It might have been the ultimate end goal in 15 years time, but I think we've jumped to it a lot sooner than we might have expected, perhaps.
And you mentioned obviously how important that community sort of aspect is with the 3G, for example. There's a Wales connection that's been intertwined with that as well, though, in a sense, because Chris Coleman opened it, did he not?
Yeah,
and then
he did,
obviously
yeah.
Ryan Giggs presented you guys with your winners' medals at the Welsh Cup final.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you've ended up yourself now working within the Wales setup on under 21 camps, but there's always sort of been that Welsh connection with your journey as well.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, I know Wales were very, the Welsh FA were very keen in getting the 3Gs throughout Wales at one point, weren't they, over the last couple of years? And I think we were one of the last few to get sort of put through, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's been, as I say, it's been fantastic for us and fantastic for the local community. But yeah, that tie-in with Wales, it was great. When Chris Coleman came and opened it, we had a 500 people there, something like that, when he opened it. We had loads of kids from our academy, local academies and stuff like that. And we had a really big academy day to actually open it. And we've got there's a huge photo that's about 6 foot wide in Gap Personnel's head office, and it's Chris Coleman and Andy Morrison and Jay Catton all in the middle, and then an enormous line of kids either side on the day that they opened it. And it's a fantastic photo to show the investment in the youth as well as the local community as well.
And as someone that's from that community, you know, you've laid your roots there and so on as well. Never mind the fact that you're in it and you're contributing to the success of that club in your own way. It must be really nice to just see it happening anyway, because the club means so much to you because of where you're from and where you're based.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, for 20 of my 34 years, I've lived 2 miles away from Connors Quay, basically. My dad was born in Shotton, so he's literally, my family couldn't be any closer to based in the community, sort of thing, basically. So it's fantastic to see so much being done to build for the local community. Because there's a lot that goes, as I say, a lot that goes on, sort of thing, behind the scenes to make everything all happen. But seeing it all come together, like on a day like that, for example, is fantastic.
And there are clubs like this across Wales, you know, not just in the Cymru Premier, but in Cymru North, Cymru South, Tier 3, Tier 4, Tier 5, and so on. What would you say to people who might be listening to this and thinking, I might give it a go, you know, volunteering?
Get involved, absolutely get involved, volunteer. As I say, there's a number of things that I've done that if you'd have asked a 15-year-old me, I'd have thought you'd have been dreaming. I've been extremely lucky, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, somebody's got to be lucky, why can't it be you? There's plenty of opportunities there for people. There's so many roles in a football club that can be fulfilled on match day. There's so many people that are needed to make a football club run on a match day as well, and not just on a match day, but behind the scenes, paperwork, doing licensing, everything like that. So even if you're not kind of a graphic person like myself, I do the design of the programs and the website and stuff like that, as well as the photography. But if you're an accountant or you're into your administration and that side of things, there's absolutely key roles that are involved in football on that aspect as well. And I would 100% say to volunteer, because it's given me some amazing life memories that I will absolutely never forget. And to be honest, I used to be an enormous Man United fan, and I wouldn't miss a Man United game on TV. I would stream it, I'd do whatever I could to watch it. I've gone so far the other way now, and I'm so involved with Connors Quay that I wouldn't miss a Connors Quay game now, as opposed to missing a Man United game. I'll quite happily just check the score on my phone now for Man United, whereas Connors Quay, I've got to be there. And that's because I've grown in, like, fallen in love with the club, basically, through the time that I've been there, everything that I've done and everything that I've seen, the family element, because there's been such a good core of staff and players over the last 5 or 6 years. We've all sort of been on the journey together, basically. And you never want to miss out, because there's been so many memorable memories. You don't want to miss the next one, basically, sort of thing. So,
and you mentioned there that you've had some excellent highlights that you never thought you'd experience. I mean, I know the story, and I dare say the Nomads Ultras listening to this will know the story as well, but can you pick out some of those highlights?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the big turning point was qualifying for the top six the first year that Andy was there. Andy arrived and
the manner of which as well, sorry, yeah, cut across, but I remember being there, I think it was my first game I'd watched. Andy Morrison, actually the Peace for Your programme couple of years ago it was against TNS,
exactly,
and you guys were on fire at the time, and you can talk me through the rest of it.
Well, we were on fire at the time, but at the same time, in my time being involved with the club, the best we'd ever had against TNS was scoring one in a 3-1 defeat against them. We'd never got anywhere near them, to be honest with you. They'd beaten us 5-1, 4-0, 3-1, no problem. And it was, right, to qualify for the top six, got to beat TNS. Right, okay, how do we go about doing that then? And within the first hour, we were 2-0 up. And you think, wow, we've turned a corner here all of a sudden. Because at that point, TNS were untouchable to us. And then all of a sudden, as I say, we were 2-0 up, and you're thinking, right, something's going to happen here. And it did. We went on, and we were in that top six, and we felt devastated not to get automatic qualification, because I remember being 2-1 up away at Newtown, and that result would have nigh on guaranteed us automatic qualification for Europe. And we ended up losing 3-2 to two last 5-minute goals, which was an absolute sickener. But things happen for a reason, and we ended up going on and winning the playoffs against Andy's old team Airbus in the most dramatic fashion, with an 84th minute winner or something like that from Wes Baines. And if you ask Andy what's his most memorable moment, I'm 99% sure that's what he'll still say, because he said that's the one that gave us the platform to then go on and do everything we've done since. And I think it meant a lot to Andy personally as well, because it was against Airbus, it's his old team. His family were all there, his family were down on the pitch at the end of it. I remember taking photos of that and giving him all of the photos at the end of it, and he was absolutely made up with it, that was such a big moment for him personally, kind of his first role as manager realistically, and he'd only been in the role for 6 months and he'd already qualified for Europe, and it was fantastic for us. But then to then kick on and go over, personally I got then to go to Geneva to go to the UEFA draw, which again, 15 year old me, if you'd have told me you go into the UEFA headquarters, I'd have wondered what you're on about, sort of thing. But an amazing experience. Again, you meet the delegates from the opposition, you're setting up all the meetings for the matches and everything, things like that, and drew 0-0 with Starbuck at Rill, and I remember thinking we should have beaten them probably, but they're a Norwegian full time team in the middle of their season, surely they're supposed to be a lot better than that. And we went over there and 1-0 after 15 minutes or something like that through Callum Morris. And then you're just counting, like we were just sort of counting down then. And I was looking up and 89 minutes, 90 minutes, we're going to do this. And then it happens and you think, wow. And then the sort of the media that kicked off on the back of it. And as it turned out, we were the first team to ever keep clean sheets across two legs in Europe in something like 230 games. That Welsh teams had actually played in Europe, which is an unbelievable statistic. And then you go away and again you've got Serbia away and playing in Vojvodina and teams like that sort of thing, and it's just amazing atmospheres again, sort of thing. Go over there and 6,500-7,000 people, a guy with a loudspeaker, the full on Serbian ultras in the crowd kind of thing, and it's not that far removed from that same team that was playing down at Gillsfield 6 months prior, sort of thing, when you put it like that. And it's amazing how from top to bottom you can go, so to speak.
What I found really interesting was sort of, you know, you have some fun with it on social media in terms of what you said about Kilmarnock
and
about Manchester United in recent months, for example. I mean, for those who don't know, I don't know anyone who doesn't, but obviously you guys masterminded a victory over Kilmarnock, and you've obviously experienced Belgrade as well, which is where Manchester United found themselves very recently.
Yeah, that was unbelievable, to be perfectly honest. Again, it was a bit of a funny one because we're playing at Rill, with that being our kind of a home European ground, and we lost 2-1 to Kilmarnock at home, and it was a 92nd minute winner that they scored, and again we all felt really disappointed that we'd lost. And again, when you sort of put it into context, everybody was kind of thinking, well, it's Kilmarnock, there's only Rangers and Celtic above them, they must be amazing. They came and they worked quite nicely, but we were disappointed not to have got something out of that first leg. So when we went up there, we genuinely went up there with a feeling of we can do this. It wasn't a kind of, oh well, we'll go and play for pride, we might get one and we'll see how we get on. It was, there was genuine enthusiasm in the camp that it could be done. And again, when we went 1-2 nil up, it wasn't against the run of play, it wasn't a hoofball goal, as we're very often credited for. And as you say, we had a bit of fun with that on social media, that I put something out and I believe it was something like a 20 plus pass move that led to Ryan Wignall's opening goal. Obviously we get quite often tagged with, oh, a big hoof, a big left to right, front to back, etc. But it was 20 odd passes and it was a fantastically worked team goal. And again, the sort of the from my job side of it, from a social media aspect, it was a brilliant piece of work. I was really happy with it because it got a load of interactions and it got loads of likes, loads of retweets, and it got more eyes on us at the end of the day and got us more followers on Twitter. So it worked really well. And as you say, then we went to Partizan, where when we'd met them at UEFA, because you get the draw done at UEFA and you know who you've got in round one and then you know who you might have in round two. So we had the meeting and we briefly met our opposition from Partizan, and it was almost a handshake. Yeah, we won't see you, we'll see Kilmarnock in the next round, see you later, bye. See you later, boys. And they ignored myself and Tom, the club secretary, to a certain extent. And then obviously when it happened, I think it was a shock to them and a shock to everybody that it happened. But it was they treated us fantastically over there, and the Serbs have kind of almost adopted us as Welsh brothers, to be honest with you, because we sort of not only respected them, because obviously the Partizan Belgrade, at the end of the day, they're a club with huge history. We left the dressing room nice and tidy, and I posted a photo of that on social media, and that went down an absolute treat with all of the Serbians. And then we've kind of played on it a little bit, like you say, with mentioning, are we better than Man United when they play Man United and stuff like that? We only lost 4-0 on aggregate. What's going to happen, etc., etc. And every time we put something out now, there's always a notification on the Twitter, liked or retweeted by a Serbian account, very often. So we've got a funny little reach into Eastern Europe sort of thing now as well, which is quite funny, really. So,
and I joked about Andy in the intro.
Yeah.
We have to talk about him, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I don't know how to put into words what the impact I think he's had. I don't think many people can.
No.
I think if anyone can, you probably can, though.
Maybe,
because you,
yeah,
perhaps know him better than most.
Yeah.
So what from the beginning, I guess, when he comes in, what does he change in terms of, I'm not saying tactically now, but what's the difference when Andy comes in, and how have you observed the man to be over a number of years?
Intense, passionate, and so detailed you would not believe, is probably the way I would say that he's been. In terms of the preparation for opposition, he doesn't care who it is, how big they are, how small they are, he'll go and scout them. He will get as much detail as he physically can do on that opposition, and he will know everything about them before kickoff. And then as a result, so will all other players. Every single player will know their role, know their job. Every set piece possibility that the opposition might throw in at them, they'll know. There's no way that he won't know. And he does so much research, it's unbelievable. You look at the fact that we've been drawn against Abertillery Bluebirds in the Welsh Cup. They're the lowest ranked team in the competition left, and he went down to watch them on the weekend. And that's how much respect he shows for absolutely everybody he plays. Doesn't matter if you're Partizan Belgrade, he'll go and scout Partizan Belgrade, but he'll go and scout Abertillery Bluebirds as well, that are playing at the local sports centre. Doesn't matter to him. Every fibre of his being is about winning the next game of football. So every advantage that he can get in terms of research against the opposition, he will do. And as I say, when you actually looked back to the year that he came in, he only brought in two new signings, in Nathan Wolfe and John Disney. There was only two changes to the entire squad that was rock bottom the day that he took over. And then he managed to get us up into the fourth and then into Europe that same season. So I think it shows you that the players were there. It was just the management wasn't quite right. Obviously, no disrespect to the previous management whatsoever. But I think Andy's just got that experience, obviously, from his time at City. And as I say, his intensity. Nobody wants to let him down. I wouldn't say people are...
Out of fear.
I'm joking, by the way, but do you know what I mean? That's the thing. From the outside looking in, I remember when he was appointed, and I remember thinking, God, he's blooming scary from the sidelines. But now, knowing him as I do, it's just because he's a winner, and that is the bottom line. All he cares about is winning. There is nothing else that matters to him. And even me personally, I've started sitting in the dressing room because I want to go out there and win for him, and I'm just the photographer. But that's the sort of impact he has on the entire club. He makes every single person believe, and he makes every single person want to win and want to succeed. And I think that's sort of been brought to the fore in what we have achieved in his tenure, basically.
And you mentioned winning there. Obviously, there's been a lot of highlights and focal points. I guess the biggest one has maybe still eluded you so far, in terms of obviously everybody wants to win that title and get into the Champions League, but no mistaking how big a challenge it is.
No, it's an enormous challenge. I mean, obviously TNS have been there for 8 years, I think it is, off the top of my head, now that they've been there consecutively. They're there for a reason. They're going to stay there for a reason, probably. It's great that we're where we are in the league at the moment. We're having a great start to the season. We had a great start to the season last season. And then TNS have got that ability to just go phase two, 10 wins, job done. And that's the end of everybody else. Nobody else has got a chance if that happens. But I think the quality in the league is improving. You see the likes of Barry have had a fantastic start to the season. There was three unbeaten teams for the first 12 games of the season. So that shows you as well the sort of the quality that's in there as well. And the fact that the top four is only split by 4 or 5 points at the moment, it's not where it was 4 or 5 years ago, where TNS were already 18 points clear or whatever ridiculous figure it was. They'd always go out and already be far too far ahead for anybody to catch going into phase two, realistically. But yeah, I think that is our ultimate goal. We would love to win the league. But as I say, realistically, TNS will more than likely, I would probably say, and this is me being a sensible realist rather than a blind optimist kind of thing, that they'll probably come good and they'll probably win the league, as they generally always do. But as far as we can push them is absolutely what we'll go and do. I know all of the lads in the dressing room want to do it, and it feels as though it's going really well this season for us as it stands at the moment. Let's see how long we can continue it and keep pushing them back away from us as far as we can do, basically.
Because the gap is decreasing. I think that's been true for a few years now. You know, I feel a bit sorry for the likes of Scott Ruscoe, because people seem to point the finger and say that it might be because of TNS not being as good anymore. And I say, you know, everyone at TNS in terms of in that respect. You know, I feel a bit sorry for them, when actually the standard of across the board in the league is increasing year on year on year, and that gap is getting so much smaller. You know, I was talking to someone, one of the managers in the league the other day, who said that there's nothing between the players now. No. There's just one or two in some squads who can turn a game on his head.
Yeah.
And that's it. And the management staff, they're all pro license or going on to their pro license or around that sort of level. Yeah. You know, you look at yourselves, for example. I mean, you've got Jay, you've got Craig, you've got Andy, we've all done their pro license.
Exactly,
so, you know, there's incredible talent and experience and qualifications there. But when do you think, if not this year, I don't know, when do you think you might see that dominance of TNS broken?
I'd like to see it ended this season. See if we could do it this season, why not?
Because you thought you could do it last year, surely.
Yeah, exactly, that's the thing. We felt as though we were right in it until probably just the tail end of... Realistically, the game for me personally, which I think kind of killed us a little bit, was away at Carmarthen. It was the last game of Phase 1, and we were 2-1 up with 10 minutes to go, and we ended up losing 3-2. And if we'd have won that, we'd have gone into phase two, 6 points clear at the top of the league, I think it would have been. And I think that, just dropping it to 3 points, kept it, although 6 points would have been still touching distance, obviously, it kept it really tight at the top instead. And I think that kind of killed us off a little bit, unfortunately. And then we, I think the lads will agree with me that they didn't turn up when we played TNS at home on the televised game, and we lost 2-0, and it was just a bit of a damp squib, really, to be honest with you. That game, it was kind of it was built up as the battle of first and second place, and it just didn't quite live up to it, unfortunately for us. Normally every time we generally give TNS a very good game, and it was the one time we've probably not really given them a good game that we really needed to, and it was a stuck in the back of the throat, that one kind of thing, because you kind of, that was a really big opportunity that, again, if we'd have won there, we'd have seen them off and we'd have still been another 3 points clear of them at the top of the league. And then I think they drew level with us that day and then just kept on powering on and won the remainder of their games, and that was the end of that sort of thing, unfortunately. But they've lost 3-4 games already this season. There's times when they didn't lose that many in an entire campaign, and we're only 14-15 games into the season, they've lost that many. So absolutely, the quality in the league is improving dramatically, as you say. I mean, like, speaking to Andy the other week in his post-match interview with me after the Carmarthen game, I think it was, and at the time they were sat dead bottom, and he said there's no way that they're 11 places behind us in terms of quality. And that shows you that at the time we were top, they were 12th, but Andy was saying there's no way that there's 11 places between them. So you can see that the quality's there, even right at the bottom of the league. And you've seen that with, again, that they, Carmarthen that I've mentioned there, they've gone and beat Cardiff Met 3-0 this weekend. That was, for me, a surprise. Obviously, they've not won a game all season, and then their first one is to go to Cardiff Met and win 3-0. It's an extremely difficult place to go and win. We know that from a couple of draws and a last-minute winner there over the last couple of years. It's an extremely difficult place to go. So to go and score three there is a real achievement. I think there's you can see that the grip has been loosened, shall we say, a little bit on TNS's dominance of everything. They've not won the treble for the last couple of years. I know that might sound a bit daft that they've still obviously gone and won the league, but they didn't win the cup a couple of years ago because we won it. Obviously they won it again last year, but then they haven't won the league cup for a couple of years, and it's just starting to, the stranglehold is loosening ever so slightly, I think, and it might be time for somebody else maybe to win the league eventually.
Would that be the one thing that you haven't seen your team do in the time that you've been there, or are there other things that you think, you know, I'd like to do this while I'm at Connors Quay and so on? Not that you're going to leave after they win the league,
Yeah, obviously winning the league is absolute priority number one sort of thing. I think the one that I know that sticks with some of the lads in the dressing room is the League Cup. 5 semi-finals and we've lost all 5 of them 1-0, and it's a sickener, to be honest with you. Whilst some people might not put it at the absolute top of the priority list, it probably comes third in the list of priorities realistically, but it's that one that we've always been very, very close to, and yet somehow never even made the final. We had Cardiff Met at home, and Cardiff Met had never ever beaten us, and they won 1-0 with a sloppy mistake of a goal given away by us last season sort of thing. And going into the game, you're full of confidence because you think, well, Cardiff Met have never beat us, why wouldn't we be confident that we're going to get a place in the final? But football's football at the end of the day. You can sometimes put whatever you want into a team in terms of investment and in terms of preparation and things, and then football's football, like I say, and one thing can go wrong, that nobody's made that mistake all season. That mistake happens on that one day, and that's the end of the game. That's 1-0, and that's it, sort of thing. But yeah, I'd love to be able to just go and say, right, we've picked up another piece of silverware. That'd be brilliant. I think realistically, we probably should have won the Scottish Challenge Cup last year. I don't think I'd be alone in saying that. I'm sure there's probably a lot of neutrals that would probably say that as well. Being 1-0 up there and having 3 or 4 extremely good chances to be 3 or 4-0 up at half time against Ross County, that would have been a completely different game. Even if we were only 2-0 up at half time, it would have been a totally different game in the second half. But they obviously showed their their quality and their pedigree and came out and won 3-1. Fair play to them, they were great, and that was another amazing experience. But I think that's one that we'll probably look back on and think, oh, probably should have won that. But we're the first Welsh team to have been in the final of the Scottish Challenge Cup anyway, so you can't turn your noses up at that at the end of the day. And it was a runners-up medal that maybe in 10 years' time we'll look back on and go, yeah, fair play. That was a well-earned runners-up medal. I know nobody wants a runners-up medal, but somebody's got to have them.
Yeah. And in terms of sort of obviously players come and go and move on and managers come and go and move on, the volunteers stay there for the long haul, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
generally,
you mentioned a gentleman earlier who's been there since the foundation of the club,
exactly,
for example.
Yeah,
have you given thought to, you know, how long you want to do it for? I mean, might even go and volunteer for another club. You know,
I don't think I would, to be honest with you. It's local to me, so it's part of me locally, sort of thing, really. I love the fact that it's local, that it's part of my local community and everything like that. But no, I haven't really given it any thought as to when I'd jack it in, but I love football that much. I don't think I could see packing in anytime soon, to be honest with you. And it'd have to take quite a change in circumstance, I think, for me to want to get away from football, shall we say.
And people might look at, you know, we were joking earlier about how cold some of the grounds
can be.
I won't list any to save putting people off going there. But you know, it's not the most glamorous job sometimes.
No,
I wouldn't even call it a job because you don't get paid for it.
Yeah.
It's genuinely volunteering. So people might be listening to this or see pictures of you in the cold and think, well, why should I do that? But you know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's part and parcel of being involved in football. And if you love football, I had to stop playing when I was about 18 because I broke my ankle and sort of started taking on athletics as well as a more serious venture personally. So I stopped playing, but any way that I can keep involved in football on a day-to-day basis, happy days, I'll be involved in it. And I just think, like you say, that you can get some nice recognition and some nice, I don't know how to say it really, but kind of just the fact that I'll see my photos appearing on the BBC website, for example, and just seeing things like that, it's just a real nice feeling of well-being and that sort of thing, really. Mm. That, well, what I'm doing, 10,000, 100,000 people are seeing on the BBC website, and just seeing things like that, and then the odd photo might pop up on the Welsh FA account and things like that kind of thing, and just seeing the work that you do go out to so many more people and reaching a wider audience. It's just a real fulfilling feeling, I guess, basically.
And just finally, we'll move on to what we're doing here this week.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we've been with the Wales under 21s for a few days while they're preparing for a big qualifier tomorrow against Bosnia.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I think, like we said earlier, we both sort of started at the same time. Mm. I've had some amazing experiences. I know you have. I've witnessed some of your amazing experiences, and you know, I've enjoyed them, not as much because obviously you're more invested in it than I am. But it's been great for me to see a friend do so well and enjoy things so much. But this is a realization, really, isn't it? That what you're good at what you do in a way.
It's great to get sort of noticed by the powers that be, so to speak, sort of thing. It was quite funny. I was actually over in Belgrade with Connors Key when I got the call, and I just had a little message and it just said, seen your work, impressed with it, can you come and start covering the Wales under 21s games? And wow, brilliant international call up, so to speak, in inverted commas. And you don't kind of think about that when you're 8-10 years ago sat, like you say, on the side of a freezing cold pitch in the middle of nowhere taking photos. You're just kind of doing it for the love of it, and then all of a sudden it's right, you're involved in setting up an under-21s international now. Can you come and help us set up on the match day? Can you come and photograph at the training camp? Can you come and photograph headshots in the new kit? And you're getting kind of little things like that that, again, it's privileges of being involved, but kind of, I guess, proof that you're doing a good job at the same time as well, which is really satisfying to sort of find out. I mean, obviously, like I said, the new kit, getting to see that last week, kind of a little bit before it got leaked on social media and things like that. Basically, it's quite nice to
not by yourself. Get that.
No, no, of course not. Of course not by myself. No, no, but just it's nice to get those little. It's only a little perk, but it's little things that get me happy, sort of thing. Basically, just seeing stuff like that and just being in and around the lads that you can see are kind of. There's a lot of lads there in the team that I think are going to be future. Obviously they're full-time professionals at the moment, but will go on and continue to be full-time professionals, and just knowing that they appreciate you sending them the odd photo here and there, sort of thing. I'll send them a photo after training and I'll see it appear on their Instagram 5 minutes later and it's got 5,000 likes because they've got that many followers. Again, that's kind of quite a kick for me, sort of thing, I guess, really seeing them using my photos on their profiles. But no, I think it's, as you say, it is a realisation of all that hard work does get a payoff, sort of thing, at the end of the day. Obviously it can't happen for everybody. There's not going to be 30 photographers requested by the Welsh FA or whatever, sort of thing, or 30 media officers requested as well, but there is an end goal in sight, sort of thing, for those that do want to start volunteering at the local club as well. There's plenty of opportunity there for progression and that, and because there's so many different age groups obviously that can be covered as well within the Welsh setup. And there's so many different things that the likes of the FAW Trust do with their tournaments and things like that. Obviously you covered the Victory Shield and that, didn't you, sort of thing. So there's a massive opportunity where experience within the Welsh pyramid can then give you the good foothold to go and use that experience elsewhere and really help the national team as well.
So there you go, get involved is the message from Nick, I think, and from myself. You know, going back 7 or 8 years, I completely agree. You know, we probably both had dreams about where you wanted to be and things like that, and never thought I'd achieve them. No. Just thought someone's got to, so why not? Before I let you go, though, a couple of quick fire questions.
Okay.
Your best moment in your volunteering career, if that's what I call it.
Stabæk away in Norway, in Fredrikstad. Probably the best footballing / night of my life. Going there and winning 1-0, nobody expected us to do it. Going there and keeping a clean sheet, nobody expected us to do that. And then going and celebrating the way that we did afterwards was amazing. I can't tell you the exact figure because I'll get a lot of stick for it, but we broke the record of the bar for most spent in one night. And that was just a brilliant night. Videos that I've got on my phone that won't go any further, but that'll stay between me and the lads, kind of thing, that were just absolute memories for life. Just that's the one for me anyway, sort of thing, that is the pinnacle. It was just an amazing night.
Probably the most difficult question I've asked you in the last 45 minutes is biggest personality you've worked with. There's a few.
There's a fair few. Obviously Andy straight away. Jay Owen as well is the absolute sort of joker of the dressing room as well. He's a great lad to have around. There was some fun that we had getting through the airport in Vojvodina when we came back from Vojvodina, where there was a video of him being wheeled through in a wheelchair as he pretended to be somewhat injured following the football game and managed to get himself to the front of the queue and then suddenly stood up and proceeded to get straight on the plane, which was absolutely hilarious. It was a great bit of great memory again, sort of thing. But yeah, they're probably the two sort of biggest personalities, I'd say.
And in terms of what's left to achieve, I mean, what were there things that you'd like to do?
Me personally, or
yeah.
I'd like to photograph George Horan picking up the JD Cymru Premier title. I'd absolutely love to do that. And I think that's probably, it's just photographing us picking up more silverware as Connors Key, probably. It's probably my sort of target, and just getting those great photos of everybody celebrating another momentous occasion, because we've had so many of them over the last 5 years. Can we add to them? Absolutely, why not?
And just finally, what's the best bit of advice you've been given?
Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't really apply to me as much nowadays, but in terms of when I was younger and I used to be playing football regularly, I'd play football 2-3 times a week, play Saturday, Sunday, pub league, anything I could get me feet in, and then I'd be doing athletics as well. My dad always used to say to me, do it for those that can't, because there's plenty of people out there that would love to have the opportunity to get out there and go for a run, or get out there and go and play football that can't, and dream of it every day, so go out and do it for those that can't.
Well, look, this has been a long overdue conversation.
It's been
a few months in the planning, but I'm glad we got to sit down and do it, and like you said earlier, you know, just give it a go. Get involved.
Welsh football's thriving at the moment, and there's probably no better time than now to get involved, to be honest with you. There's plenty of opportunities there, so yeah, do it. And if anybody wants to get involved with Connorski, get in touch with me.
I'll make sure they do. Thank you very much, Nick.
You heard the man. Get involved. From volunteering in the JD Cymru North to working on the national teams in a few years is quite a journey. And Nick has done it because he just fancied giving it a go, and his passion and his work ethic have done the rest. As the man himself said, those amazing experiences he's had have got to happen to someone, so why can't it be you? Helping your local club reach new heights in whatever way you can. If you've listened to this podcast and been inspired and want to get involved, then do it, and get in touch with us or your local club to see what opportunities there are out there for you to help out. Welsh football needs people like Nick. It needs people like you. So come and join in the fun.